This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
On Higher Ground. The Amazing Faiths Project and Houston Dinner Dialogues is a diversity celebrating project cooperated by Interfaith Ministries for Greater Houston and the Boniek Center for Religious Tolerance at Rice University in cooperation with the Office of the Mayor of the City of Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
This is Jack Belinsky
and Jennifer Renee.
Deborah Bell.
And Glenn Holt.
On tonight's show, David Elliott calls in and talks to us about what's going on in Washington.
There must be him now.
It's that magic thing, yes. And then motivational speaker Kelly Smith.
She's gonna talk to us tonight about emotional intelligence, the key to creating the life of your dreams.
Ooh. And Deborah?
What?
Who you talk to?
We have our favorite poet, Donna Garrett, here from Taipei, Taiwan, where she's been doing some work, and she's going to share with us what she's been doing over there and some of her recent writing.
And also, we're going to have Maria Gonzalez come in and talk to us about the upcoming Houston GLBT Political Caucus monthly meeting, where the endorsements for the mayor and one city council person and possibly the HISD bond election. So all that's coming up. But first, not yet, not quite yet, David will be calling us in from Washington, even though it's a holiday.
Yes, David Elliott is the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, but he calls us just as a inside the beltway person and shares some of his views on what's going on politically around the country. I think he's going to talk a little bit about a certain senator who was caught being naughty.
In the bathroom.
Yes. One of those people we don't want to claim. Yeah. And so it's always good to have David on, and he joins us the first Monday of each month. And as soon as Glenn can get to the phone, I think we'll have David on the line.
So, it's a holiday. It's Labor Day.
It hardly seemed like it.
Well, exactly.
It seemed like Sunday.
Yeah.
Again.
Well, it was that day, you know, I was like doing laundry and cleaning up and all those tasks that you do when you have time off.
But, so, other than that?
Well, one thing about it, by the way, speaking of such, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus General Meeting is Wednesday at 7 p.m. At 6:30, there's a wine and cheese reception, but the speaker, as well as the endorsements, the speaker is Charles Kuffner from the Houston Chronicle. He is their blogger who does Off the Cuff.
Oh, what a clever title.
That's what that is.
Yeah, and that's Cuff with a K, right?
Well, Charles Kuffner is with a K, but Off the Cuff is actually spelled with a C.
I see. All right.
I mean, they did get that right.
Well, I hear that David is on the line with us.
Oh, he is. Hi, David.
Well, good evening. How are y'all tonight?
We are quite well. We're on holiday. How about you?
On holiday, well, I confess that I live in D.C., and I did go into the office a little bit today, but I consider myself on holiday.
Good. Well, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, you know, Jack, I got a quote from our friend Deb Bell. Comes by the way of Will Rogers, and it goes something like this. Quote, "About all I can say about the U.S. Senate is that it opens with a prayer and closes with an investigation." And truer words have never been spoken in D.C. these days. But, you know, it's not just the Senate these days, despite what I lovingly call the latest Republican bathroom sex scandal. It's all of Congress. It's the House and the Senate. So, for those keeping score at home, consider the following. Former Republican Congressman Duke Cunningham and Bob Ney are currently in prison. Republican Congressman Gary Miller is under investigation for a suspicious land deal. Republican Congressman Jack Doolittle's home was recently raided by the FBI, which was investigating his dealings with disgraced lobbyist Jack Abramoff. Republican Congressman Rick Renzi, facing an FBI investigation for allegedly receiving a kickback in a land transaction, announced he will not seek re-election. Republican Congressman Tom Feeney is questioned by the FBI about his ties to Jack Abramoff. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski is accused of engaging in a questionable land deal. Republican Senator Ted Stevens has his home raided by both the FBI and the IRS amid allegations concerning bribery. Republican Senator David Vitter acknowledged being on the so-called D.C. Madam's phone list and also acknowledges previous contact with prostitutes. And, of course, Republican Senator Larry Craig is arrested and pleads guilty to charges of soliciting sex in a bathroom in the Minneapolis airport. Now, what are we to make of all of this? Do Republicans possess some sort of genetic makeup that makes them more inclined to commit crime?
David, no. Do we have any on the Democratic side that are under investigation?
We do. We have one House member, Congressman William Jefferson of New Orleans, who you might recall was caught stuffing $250,000 in his freezer at home. Allegedly, the result...
That's where I keep all my cold cash.
That's right. That's where the cold cash is supposed to be kept.
Yeah. But, you know, I want to get back to this question. Do Republicans have, like, a crime gene that makes them commit these crimes? Is it genetics or is it environment?
Is it nature or nurture?
You give them a little power and they self-destruct.
Well, exactly, Jack. It's not genetics.
David
nature.
Thought he was going to be talking primarily with Jack, but actually it's Jennifer that's been making
this
clips.
Is Jennifer, and I've been talking to you.
I'm sorry?
This is Jennifer Renee, and I've been the one talking to you.
Oh, I apologize.
Jack's here. It's just...
I get into my 40s and the hearing starts going, okay?
Anyway, go ahead. I want to hear some more.
Well, you know, I want to make the point here that, you know, this is environment, not genetics. It's nurture, not nature. Simply put, the Republicans were in power for too long, and as we know, absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. For years, they've held the White House, the Senate, and the House, and now they don't. And the Democrats are all too willing to let the subpoenas fly and the investigations roll. Now, a question is, what will this mean for the 2008 elections? Some Republicans already are predicting multiple seat losses for the GOP in the U.S. Senate. Another Republican insider recently told the Washington Post, quote, "It's always darkest right before you get clobbered over the head with a pipe wrench. But then it actually does get darker." End quote. Now, a simple look at the math explains why Republicans have a steep hill to climb. 34 seats are up for election in the U.S. Senate next year. 22 are held by Republicans, and only 12 are held by the Democrats. Speaking hypothetically, if each party won half the number of seats held by the other party, it would result in a whopping five-seat gain by Democrats. But elections are not exercises in hypothesis. They are the product of a given environment. Just like certain plants grow well in some environments and not so well in others. And we're not even taking into account the recent announcement by Republican John Warner of Virginia, a state that is increasingly trending Democrat, that he will retire. And we're also not taking into account the anticipated decision of Senator Chuck Nagel of Nebraska that he will not seek re-election, and the possibility that popular Nebraska Democrat Bob Kerry will replace him. We're also not taking into account the fact that Colorado Republican Senator Wayne Allard is relinquishing his seat, also in a state that is trending blue. And we're not even taking into account the recent whisper campaign in Washington, D.C., that Texas Senator John Cornyn may be vulnerable.
We hope so, yeah.
We're hoping that.
Well, in fact, the Cornyn race could be the real sleeper race to watch in 2008, an indicator of just how far it is possible for what was once a major political party, the GOP, to fall. Other factors that bode well for the Democrats: a huge fundraising advantage at all levels, a quickly expanding presence on social networking sites such as MySpace.com and Facebook, and a presidential race that has ignited the passions of Democratic activists while hardly exciting the Republican base. All in all, like Democratic victories in the years of 1958, 1964, and 1974, 2008 is poised to be a breakout year, a transformative year in American politics, and a very, very, very good year for Democrats. A very good year indeed. To alter Will Rogers' quote a little bit, we'll open next year with a prayer, and we'll close it with a landslide.
Well, certainly it was interesting on how quickly they got Craig out of office.
Very quickly. And, you know, I have to say that there was a little bit of anti-gay bigotry involved.
Yes.
There. You know, when Louisiana Senator David Vitter, you know, acknowledged that he had had, you know, contact with prostitutes, you know, nobody was rushing to urge him to resign. In fact, he went into a closed meeting of the GOP caucus in the U.S. Senate, and they applauded him. Now, to be fair, to be fair, there is one difference that's important to acknowledge, and that is that Senator Larry Craig did plead guilty to a crime. And Senator Vitter of Louisiana was never charged, you know, never brought through the legal system or anything like that. So, you know, when we consider the anti-gay bigotry, the anti-gay animus, whatever you want to call it, it's important to acknowledge that.
Well, I think it's interesting that a lot of that anti-gay stuff came from Craig. Isn't he one of the people noted for being just venomous?
Well, that is a very astute comment. You know, he was a traditional family values guy. He pushed the anti-gay marriage constitutional amendment really hard, and the hypocrisy is part of the story. It's part of the undercurrent that cuts under this story. You know, if a Democrat, if a pro-gay Democrat, not that there are all that many of those, mind you, but if a pro-gay Democrat had been caught doing something like this, I don't think that individual would have been forced to resign, because the hypocrisy wouldn't have been there.
But does someone soliciting sex in a men's room from another man constitute being gay? It's a homosexual act, but...
You know, I know that's an interesting question. I mean,
I don't know what you guys do.
It's just a man wanting to have sex with a man.
I would say, and I've always been, you know, rather a traditionalist on this point, that nobody, you know, gay, straight, bisexual, transgendered, whatever, should be out having sex in, you know, parks or lakes or bathrooms.
Certainly not in bathrooms.
And, you know, places where, you know, minors might be there, or, you know, people who might be offended by such content. But I don't know if that automatically makes you gay if you're doing that sort of thing.
I mean, makes you stupid.
You have to argue that it would
especially
at least make you get,
bi. Yeah, if you get caught and you're a U.S. senator, it makes you pretty stupid.
Well, you know, somebody posted a blog comment on one of the blogs that was out there. I was reading a feature story about the police officer who, you know, apprehended Senator Craig, and apparently he's, you know, very youthful and good looking, and somebody posted the blog comment that at least Senator Craig has good taste in men. I mean, you know, I'm not going to go there, but there you have it.
Well, there was some dialogue about maybe the officer misunderstood, you know, that Senator Craig said he was just, you know, bending over and getting a piece of paper off the floor. Is there any reason to believe that the officer misconstrued what was going on?
You mean entrapment? You mean entrapment?
Well, you know,
I didn't say it.
There are two answers to that. First off, it's absolutely, fundamentally clear, it could not be more clear that Senator Craig was indeed soliciting sex. However, the second answer to that question is Minneapolis, is the city of Minneapolis, which just experienced this huge bridge disaster, in such great shape that they can afford to be dispatching a police officer to spend all of his time in this men's restroom, entrapping people, or, you know, seeing if people are going to hit on them.
Yeah.
And what was that officer doing in there to begin with? So there you have it. This is a complicated little deal. This is a messy little deal.
But he pled guilty, obviously to a lesser crime, but he still pled guilty. Because of the incident.
Indeed he did.
I mean, he negotiated something for a lesser, and he said, yes, I'm guilty, and that it went about that. So he's guilty, whatever it was.
In the eyes of the law? Yes, indeed.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So there you have it. And so following on the, it was Mark Foley, right? Another Republican?
The Republican from Florida who had suspicious relationships with the some of the pages, the high school students who traveled to Washington, D.C. and, you know, interned with the Congress.
Yes, and he sent some emails and other things. I mean, it brings us back to what you were talking about, David. It just really kind of makes you wonder what the heck is going on.
And the thing to concentrate on here is just the Republican hypocrisy. You know, the family values guys, the guys who stand up day after day and cast anti-gay, anti-lesbian, anti-bisexual, anti-transgender votes, and then they get nailed, so to speak, for this sort of thing.
Is it internalized?
No, they stopped it. They arrested him before that could happen.
Before he got nailed. Well, is it internalized homophobia?
Well, you know, that's another really astute question. And it speaks
aren't I, David?
You're great.
It speaks to our larger society that, you know, certain folks, you know, be they Republican House members or Republican senators or what, they feel like they have to live these secret lives so that they cannot come out and live honestly. And so anytime you have to live a double life, you're going to do things that are going to force you into these situations. If people didn't have to live double lives, we wouldn't be on this radio show right here, right now, talking about Republican hypocrisy.
Yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh. But it just begs the I don't care if they're in the closet, as long as they're not voting against us.
Well, you know, I looked at this blog earlier today, because I wanted to come up with a list of, like, Republicans across the country that had been, you know, caught up in these sex scandals this year. And you wouldn't believe what I came up with. You know, I read you a list of House Republicans who have been involved in various financial scandals and what have you. But there are like 40 or 50 Republican state legislators, Republican state senators, high-ranking members of Republican state executive committees who've been caught up in sex scandals.
And there's been quite a few fundamentalists and right-wing religious leaders also.
Right, and a little bit of overlap between the two. And it really comes back to, these people, because of the roles they've taken, you know, the Republican, the anti-gay message that they've been forced into this subversive, illicit situation where they can't live honestly. And by the way, and this is a very important point that I want to make to y'all, you know, but before we have to close out the segment, the Republican Party in the United States in the next 2 to 4 to 6 years is, out of necessity, about to undergo a fundamental transformation where they are going to be dropping the anti-gay stuff.
They're going to have to, yes.
They're going to have to for the Bible.
Yes. Well, David Elliott...
Well, but I mean, then they'll probably find somebody else to pick on.
Oh, well...
Illegal aliens.
or the Russians, or the North Koreans, or the Iranians.
It'll be somebody.
Don't get the Chinese.
Yeah, okay. Well, David Elliott joins us the first Monday of every month on Queer Voices with the Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. Enjoy the rest of your Labor Day holiday, David, and thanks for being with us on Queer Voices.
Well,
Nick?
Well, thank you so much for having me, and you all have a good evening.
Thank you.
And now we go to This Way Out, followed by Jennifer Renee and Kelly Smith.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 1st, 2007. A Superior Court judge in Polk County, Iowa, ruled this week that the state's Defense of Marriage Act, approved by the legislature and governor in 1998, is unconstitutional. In one of the strongest arguments yet for marriage equality in the U.S., Judge Robert Hansen said in his August 30th decision that this court has yet to hear any convincing argument as to how excluding same-sex couples from getting married promotes responsible reproduction in general or by different-sex couples in particular. So far as this court can tell, the law operates only to harm same-sex couples and their children. He ordered that the state's marriage laws must be read and applied in a gender-neutral manner so as to permit same-sex couples to enter into a civil marriage. The original lawsuit was filed by 6 same-gender couples in December 2005 after they were denied marriage licenses by clerks who cited Iowa's Defense of Marriage Act. They were represented by queer advocacy group Lambda Legal and Des Moines lawyer Dennis Johnson, who called the ruling a moral victory for equal rights. County Attorney John Sarcone promised a quick appeal to the Iowa Supreme Court and asked Hansen to stay his ruling until that appeal was resolved. The judge complied the next day, but not before two men became the state's first same-gender couple to legally marry. The marriage license approval process normally takes 3 business days, but Sean Fritz and Tim McQuillan took advantage of a loophole that allows couples to skip the waiting period if they pay a $5 fee and get a judge to sign a waiver. On August 31st, the Reverend Mark Stringer declared the two men legally married in a wedding ceremony on the Unitarian minister's front lawn in Des Moines. "But I can't believe this is happening in Iowa," said State Republican House Minority Leader Christopher Rantz. He said the ruling demonstrates the need for a constitutional amendment in his state to ban same-gender marriage, and that, "I guarantee you there will be a vote on this issue come January when the legislature reconvenes." The Williams Institute at UCLA School of Law released a new research study this week showing that 19% of the 5,800 same-gender couples in Iowa are raising more than 1,400 children. According to the study, same-gender couples with children have fewer economic resources than their heterosexual married counterparts. Williams Institute senior research fellow Gary Gates said that these couples would no doubt benefit from the protections and recognition that marriage provides.
Maine's highest judicial body, the Law Court, ruled this week that a lesbian couple should be allowed to jointly adopt 2 developmentally disabled siblings currently in foster care. Under existing Maine law, either attorney Ann Courtney or family counselor Marilyn Kirby could have adopted the children as a single parent, but the couple decided they wanted to adopt them jointly and appealed a lower court ruling that prevented them from doing so. In this week's ruling, the law court said that a joint adoption assures that in the event of either adoptive parent's death, the children's continued relationship with the surviving parent is fixed and certain. The joint adoption, the court added, also enables the children to be eligible for a variety of public and private benefits, and most importantly, the love, nurturing, and support of not one, but two parents. Maine Attorney General Stephen Rowe filed a friend of the court brief saying that the state should protect the best interests of each adoptive child. Several professional organizations, including the American Psychological Association and the Child Welfare League of America, also supported the couple. The unanimous ruling will allow other co-parent adoptions by same-gender couples in the state. Maine currently has 2,286 children in foster care, according to the state's Department of Health and Human Services, and at least 530 of those children are seeking adoption. Co-adoptions are expressly permitted in a dozen other U.S. states.
In other news from around the world, gay journalist Rex Walkner is reporting that the 18 men arrested in Bauchi, Nigeria, August 5th, on charges of vagrancy, cross-dressing, and practicing sodomy as a profession, won't face the death penalty, contrary to most media reports. The men, who were detained at what authorities described as a gay wedding party at the Benko Hotel, were charged under Section 372, Subsection 2E of the Bauchi State Sharia Penal Code, which allows for punishment of 1 year in prison and 30 lashes. At an August 21st hearing in the Tunda Al-Kali Area Court, Judge Tanimu Abu Bakar determined that the men should have been charged only under the section's vagrancy and cross-dressing provisions. Prosecution of the case was turned over to the Bauchi State Ministry of Justice instead of the police. The next hearing is September 13th. The judge released at least five of the men on bail and returned the others to jail. An angry mob of Muslims threw rocks at them as they left the court building. Police fired tear gas to disperse the mob, which also tried to set the courthouse on fire. Another mob attempted to break into the prison this week and lynch the men still in jail. One prison official was injured as guards repelled the angry crowd. Activist Joseph Okoro of the Nigerian queer group The Independent Project has told the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission that the men actually were not dressed as women when they were arrested, and that this leads us to believe that the charges have been drummed up to incite hatred against gay people. The head of Nigeria's Anglican Church, Archbishop Peter Akinola, is the leading anti-queer voice in the 77 million member global Anglican Communion. There are more Anglicans in Nigeria, 15 million, than in any other nation except the United Kingdom, which has 26 million.
Adding fuel to the smoldering Anglican fires over lesbi-gay issues, some regions of the church also oppose women bishops. An openly lesbian priest in the Communion's U.S. wing, the Episcopal Church, is among three women and five nominees overall to become the new bishop of the Chicago Diocese. Reverend Tracy Lind was named as a finalist this week to replace William Purcell, who plans to resign after his successor is installed. It's also the first slate of candidates in the diocese to include women. Lind would become the second Episcopal bishop to live with a same-gender partner, following New Hampshire Bishop V. Gene Robinson. His consecration in 2003 was the catalyst for the debate over queer inclusion currently raging within the Anglican Communion. Episcopal bishops will meet with the church's spiritual leader, Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams, in New Orleans this month to discuss demands that they not elevate any other openly queer bishop until the communion resolves the issue, if that's even possible. If the bishops don't comply by September 30th, international leaders have warned that their relationship with the Episcopal wing will remain damaged at best. Williams has no direct authority to force a resolution because each Anglican province is self-governing. Schism could be a financial disaster for the Anglican Church because the small but wealthy Episcopalians, who number about 2.4 million, provide a significant chunk of the worldwide communion's budget.
Meanwhile, two former Episcopal priests were consecrated this week as Anglican bishops in Kenya, becoming the latest in a string of conservative ministers who are defecting to African churches in the dispute over queer clergy. West Indies Archbishop Drexel Gomez was one of 10 Anglican leaders who attended the ceremony for Bill Atwood of Texas and William Murdoch of Massachusetts in Nairobi's All Saints Cathedral. Echoing last week's statements by Nigerian Archbishop Peter Akinola, Gomez told reporters that the gospel must take precedence over culture. Homosexual practice violates the order of life given by God in Holy Scripture. According to Kenyan Archbishop Benjamin Nzimbi, 30 U.S. congregations have asked to become part of African dioceses since New Hampshire's Robinson was consecrated. He said six other U.S. priests have been consecrated as bishops in the Rwandan church. One has been consecrated in Nigeria, and another will be consecrated in Uganda this week. Atwood and Murdoch will return home to minister to their congregations with Nzimbi as their spiritual advisor. Because they're no longer affiliated with the Episcopal Church, the men will have to find new church buildings and funding in the United States. Several U.S. congregations whose priests have switched to a foreign diocese are mired in lawsuits over ownership of church property.
But finally, legally recognized same-gender unions appear to have existed 600 years ago in late medieval France, according to Alan Tulchin, an assistant professor of history at Shippensburg University in Pennsylvania, writing in the September issue of the Journal of Modern History. He says that affrèrement, or brotherment, originated with a certain type of legal contract that provided a marriage-like foundation for biological brothers who inherited the family home on an equal basis from their parents and continued to live together. But in cases where the men were single, unrelated men, the contracts provide considerable evidence that the men were using affrèrement to formalize same-sex loving relationships, says Tulchin, who studied documents and gravestones of the affrères to arrive at his conclusions. Before a notary and witnesses, the brothers pledged to live together sharing one bread, one wine, and one purse. I suspect that some of these relationships were sexual, while others may not have been, writes Tulchin. It is impossible to prove either way, and probably also somewhat irrelevant to understanding their way of thinking. They loved each other, and the community accepted that.
Best News Wrap for the week ending September 1st, 2007. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
All the news in your area, an informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Rick Watts.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee. We have with us tonight Kelly Smith. Now, Kelly's been with us twice before, but I want to go over. Kelly's a public speaker, and she has specific classes and courses. She does coaching and consulting for organizations, puts on seminars on communication, leadership, conflict resolution, women's empowerment, and an entertaining keynote speaker. And what do you do in your spare time?
I dance, and I'm a mom.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I understand that you've got a special project you want to talk about. What's going on?
Yeah. It's good. First of all, it's good to be back on your show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And the project is around communications. It's really around, it's a big vision that I, it's based on a vision that I have, to bring communication skills as life skills, leadership skills as life skills under the category of life skills, financial skills under the category of life skills, to the point in our society to where when children are being raised, that they actually are taught these skills in the school system, outside of the school system. They're taught them on a gradient approach, leadership, communication, finances, with the same level of importance as mathematics, science, language arts, etc. So that's the big picture vision, and the project is based on that vision. And the project is really helping people get that their lives show up in a communication, like really knowing that everything that you want to get out of your life and everything that you have currently out of your life has come out of communication and will continue to come out of your ability to communicate effectively.
All right. Now, communication. I guess I have a general idea what you mean by communication, but would you define that better for me?
Sure. Well, it's like when you ask people their goals. In our society, we have goals, right? So people are goal-oriented, and some people aren't. But if you take like the average person in our society today, and you say, what are your goals? They're going to tell you a lot of goals, but they're not going to tell you mastering the art of communication is one of their goals. Because I ask people all over the United States, every group that I speak to on communications, I ask, how many people have made that a goal? Like a personal slash professional goal to master the art of communication. Not many hands have gone up over the years.
Now, you've been doing this for how many years
Six
now?
6 years.
6 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure we
understand. And then some.
You've been at
teaching,
it for a while.
Yeah, teaching and things. But
professionally speaking and teaching at the level that I'm teaching now, 6 years anyway, so people don't raise their hands. They don't think that there's not a goal that occurs to them. It's not a goal that their parent taught them. It's not a goal that their society tells them. It's not a goal that they learned in school. Like a personal / professional goal to master the art of communication.
Now, in school, would that be something like, I mean, if there was a course, something like you'd take for public speaking or drama, something like that, is that what we're talking about, communication, or is it something I'm missing?
That is an aspect of communication.
Ah, okay. Well, I got part of it.
And certainly working on those skills will bring someone's communication skills up tremendously. If they take presentation skills or acting, but not in the way that I'm talking about it. I'm talking about deliberately really knowing the components of what makes up communication. What human beings, being human, what it means to be human, dealing with humanity, which also means that we have to bring in the aspect of emotions.
Okay.
And so, like, one of the things that happens when I teach communication skills classes is I think people come to me in seminars and they think I'm going to tell them how to be appropriate. Or what to say in certain situations,
well,
how
yeah,
to act.
That's what I would think. Okay, I'm wrong, right? The laughter tells me I'm wrong. Okay,
I do some of that. I do some of that, but not a lot of that. Because what I put a focus on, emphasis on, is emotional. What we're calling now, we're now calling it, it's got a label. It's called emotional intelligence. There's other ways of saying it, but that's like in our society, people are starting to get that that's what this is that we're talking about. It's the communication that goes on inside you. It's the conversations you have in your head. It's the belief systems. It's all the filters that you have, your perspectives, your opinions, and everything that constitutes how you view the world and how you show up and how you deal with people and how you deal with your life.
I thought if I had all those voices in my head, they gave me a medication for it. Are you telling me I'm supposed to really be listening to them?
Eventually, yes. If you have enough nasty voices up there in your head, you will end up on medication unless intervened
but
on.
But we're not talking about this now. We're talking about the good voices.
We're talking about being human. We're talking about being human. If anybody right now stops and listens to themselves, they'll find out that they have a conversation. When you sit and you look at somebody, let's say tomorrow you go into a public area and you sit down and you watch some people in a public area, you're going to have a conversation about each person that you see on automatic.
Thinking.
You're judging them and you're thinking about them and you're making some ideas about them. And then how you act towards them is going to be based on all of that. It's a pre-conversation.
Okay.
Also, like one of the things I did was when I was real young, I started doing this work and I started setting goals and doing vision work and doing a bunch of exercises to find out who I was. Like that conversation, just like what's my purpose? Who am I? What do I love? Where's my passion? What's my natural talents and abilities? Where am I naturally interested? I got that conversation going when I was in my mid-20s, found out what I wanted to do, and now I do everything that I love in my life. There's some pieces in my life that I'm still working on. Work in progress, for sure. No doubt about it. But basically, everything that I've lined up in my life got lined up in my mid-20s when I figured out who I was in that conversation, that internal conversation. Now what I have to deal with is the other conversation.
With other people?
In my head.
Oh.
That tells me, no, you can't have that, Kelly.
You don't
deserve that, Kelly.
I have that person,
you're not
too,
good
but
enough.
It doesn't say Kelly when it talks to me.
That would be the medication. That would be when we call in the doctor. But children, you know, if you can't, a lot of adults are just too resigned. They don't really get that this is worthy of their attention, their time and their attention to, like, really delve in and do communication classes, get coaching, take the courses, all the things that I like to send people to and I like to do. A lot of people don't get that they've given up too much. They've given up too much. Adults don't. So here's how I get people inspired. If you feel like you've
given up.
Okay,
please. I want to hear.
Think about the kids in the world today.
Okay.
Think about the kids in the world today, because the kids in the world today, their minds are fresh. We know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that they're very trainable. And for kids to learn in the school system and in the family system at a very young age, to know about their humanity and how their human mind works, and that their thoughts and beliefs create emotions and feelings. And then their feelings and emotions create how they behave and how they act. The actions that they take and the behaviors that they do are directly given by the thoughts and the feelings. And then the results they get in their life are always going to come from how they act and behave.
So it's a function of their thinking. Is it really creates the behaviors. And now, let me see if I understand. But taking it a step further, let's say we have, in many of the schools, we hear in the news all the time about how disruptive the children are, acting out in many, many ways. How is our communication that you're talking about? How can we fix it? How can we work on it? How can we help them?
Well, that's what I've been up to. What I do is I put a lot of emphasis on teaching adults this. Because to try and teach this to a child and not have this mastery going on in your own life is like a total joke. It's not going to happen. An adult and a child simultaneously have to learn this, and as our world grows into it or our society grows into it. But for kids, for right now, my son, he was having problems in school. Totally having major problems in school. And I sat down and drew out the cycle of success versus the cycle of failure, which I showed him, you know, your thoughts, Nicholas, whatever your thoughts are. And then I gave him, those are what make you feel a certain way. And then you act this way. And then you get this result. And then that result confirms your thoughts about it. And I showed him how it can go in a positive way. I showed him how it can go in a negative way. And he totally got it. And then the two next times that he started to act out at school, he caught himself and he managed himself. He corrected his behavior immediately by just knowing that, because they get it so much easier than we do.
Well, how? All right, there's some parents out there in the GLBT community. We brought, you know, for families now, and those families, I'm sure that they may have a situation like that. What do we do? How do we help our children?
Well, there's a lot of resources. That's the beautiful thing also about where we are today with our enlightenment or our awarenesses around being human and like bringing, you know, some type of real ability to say how things are going to go in our lives and how we're going to live our lives and how we're going to feel, you know, and what's going to happen with our kids, how we're going to raise our kids. There's tons and tons and tons of resources. And so what I do is I say to everybody, I say, look,
but you're one of those resources, right?
I am. Okay. Yes, I am. One of the first things that I say to people is I really call them into awareness that, look, your whole life shows up in a communication. So first and foremost, make a goal to master the art of communication in your lifetime. Now, you're not going to be able to ever master the art of communication until you're dead. That's when you'll master it. Make the goal first. Put the commitment in and then begin to look for resources ongoingly. Because it's books, it's CDs, it's call me, I'll help you, I've got classes to put you in. If you're in a corporation, then bring people into your corporation who teach communication skills. You know, there's a jillion of us trainers out there who do this work.
Well, now, I don't want to get us in the wrong direction. You know, you go to a bookstore or something, there's a whole section on self-help stuff.
Yeah, first
you know, I have a large collection at home myself, most of which I haven't ever read, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is that
really
we're not talking about that.
No, okay.
Okay, we're not talking about that. We're talking about a whole different, not something we can buy in the store. Is that what you're trying to?
Well, Jennifer, I mean, the ones that you have read, you got something out of them, right?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, so it's an ongoing process. You know, because you've been working on this for as many years as I've been working on this. It's an ongoing process.
I started my transformation 12 years ago, almost 13 now.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. And it's working out good for you.
Working out great. Yes.
You live a powerful life, yeah?
Yeah, very much so.
More and more all the time.
Absolutely.
Yep. That's what it's all about. It's about living a powerful life.
So, I don't want, because we're going to have to close up a little bit. I want to make sure we haven't missed anything. And one of it is that you're available to coach individuals and organizations on what we're talking about.
For anyone who's interested in talking to me or emailing me,
yes.
I can be reached through kellyspeaks.net. It's K-E-L-L-Y, speaks, plural, S-P-E-A-K-S.net.
Okay. And What are we talking about? Are there different seminars you offer? Or is this something, a one-on-one coaching that you can help them with?
What I do,
do they have an individual situation?
Sure. What I do is I talk to people and get a real feel for where they are in this process. Some people have already been doing some of this work, but I get a feel for where they are, what they want to create in their lives, mm-hmm. what's going on in their life, you know, what are all the different aspects of their life, and then I prescribe a formula. I have classes that I do. I have classes I send people to. I do all kinds of different work with people. So,
anything we've missed?
I don't think so.
All right. We've been talking with Kelly Smith. You can contact her at kellyspeaks.net. And this is Jennifer Ney, and this is Queer Voices.
They were at a party. They were having fun till Henrietta's ex walked in and pinched her on the bum. Now Henrietta was innocent, but Lydia felt hurt. She locked herself in the bathroom with Janine, that wicked flirt.
Lesbian moment.
Their hormones were really to blame.
It was a lesbian moment.
The kind that makes you think you'd like to open up a vein. Now they'll go home and make things right, but first they're gonna cry all night.
Lesbian moments.
The cycles are one and the same. They were at a restaurant. The dinner was so fine. The food was truly fabulous. The ambiance divine. So Sylvia said something Dolores misconstrued. She dissolved into a sobbing blob, and that upset the mood.
What did you say?
Moment.
Well, I didn't think it was funny.
The hormones were really to blame.
You sound just like my mother.
It was a lesbian.
Well, I don't like your therapist either, and neither does my therapist.
The kind that makes you think you'd like to.
We'll talk about this later, all right?
Now they'll go home and make things right, but first they're gonna cry all night.
You don't love me anymore.
The cycles were one and the same. Now couples have their ups and downs. On that you can rely. Then PMS pulls into town. It's all intensified. Mountains out of molehills. Teardrops pour like rain. A funny look can be mistook. You feel like you're insane. Is it any wonder what happened back in May? Someone got a new sports car and gave Gina a ride that day. Then a song came on the radio that made them both upset. She drove right through the window of some greasy luncheonette.
It's a lesbian moment.
Their hormones were really to blame.
It's a lesbian moment.
The shards of glass were sharp enough to open up a vein. Thank goodness they were both all right. They're well enough to cry all night.
Lesbian moment.
The cycles were one and the.
I feel bloated.
The cycles were one and the.
I feel like eating salt, sugar, salt, sugar, salt, sugar.
The cycles were one and the same.
Tour de Pink is back. On Sunday, September 9, Pink Ribbons Project will host its third annual fundraising bicycle ride, Tour de Pink 2007. Cyclists will raise money for Pink Ribbons Project, In Motion Against Breast Cancer. Contributions and pledges will fund awareness and education programs, mammograms for underserved women, and other outreach programs. Last year, over 1,000 riders registered and rode. This year, it's another family-friendly event with routes from 12 to 100 miles. It starts and ends on the Prairie View A&M University campus near Hempstead. So grab your bikes and join us Sunday, September 9 at 7:30 a.m. on the start line. To register or volunteer, visit tourdepink.org on the web. That's tourdepink.org. Or call 713-524-7465. See you there. KPFT, Houston.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
And with us this evening is Maria Gonzalez, and she is Vice President of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. And under complete disclosure, yes?
Yes, I'm Jennifer Renee, and I am President of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
And I am on the Board of Directors, so...
well, Deb, what about you?
I am a member in need of renewing.
Oh, please renew, Deborah.
Well, and what we're going to be talking about is that the monthly meeting is this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Haven Center, which is on West Alabama. I believe it's 1846. 1846, somewhere
around there. We all look at each other like
next to the
chocolate.
1847.
Oh, okay. 1847. Near the chocolate bar. That much they know.
Right next to the chocolate bar.
Let's talk about this month's scheduled speaker.
Charles Kuffner will be the speaker this week, and he is the Houston Chronicle blogger who has the off the cuff will be speaking, and it's been something we've been looking forward to because he sort of has the day-to-day pulse on what's going on.
This is Maria Gonzalez. Charles Kuffner is a blogger for... Sorry, we're a little technical difficulty here. Charles Kuffner is a blogger for... Okay, do we have this down now?
Yeah, the microphones have properly been moved.
Okay, Charles Kuffner. One more time. Charles Kuffner is a blogger. And many of you probably know him off the Houston Chronicle in Cuff's World. Also, he has another where he does political blogging. In another blog called Off the Cuff, Charles Kuffner blogs not only on political issues, but all kinds of issues, sports, the latest curiosities in Houston, and anything that fundamentally strikes his interest, including keeping his daughter Olivia up to date in the latest goings-on in the world. Charles Kuffner, he'll be speaking at the Houston GLBT Political Caucus this Wednesday. The reception starts at 6:30 at 1827 West Alabama at the Haven Center. The meeting itself will start at 7 p.m. He'll be our featured speaker. But we also have a couple of other issues we have to address.
The caucus had an endorsement meeting last month, but I understand we have some additional endorsements this week.
Yes, we were finally able to sit the mayor down and Peter Brown for a little meeting. Oh, I do want to mention the endorsement. First, we have a general meeting. That's the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. The endorsement meeting itself is the Houston GLBT Political PAC, Political Action Committee. And we have to keep those separate because of federal and state campaigning rules. Anyway, this Wednesday, we get an opportunity to make our decision on the endorsement of the mayor and Peter Brown, who's running at large one. We hope to see many of the members there. We also have another decision to make, and that is the HISD bond issue. We've been approached to endorse the issue. We've screened a representative on behalf of the bond issue, and we're inviting the members this Wednesday to come join us and sit down and talk to us. We've invited a couple of special guests whose positions might be on the other side of this endorsement.
Who are they? Who have you invited?
The most important one at this point is Representative Sylvester Turner. We've asked him to join us this Wednesday. We invited Representative Garnett Coleman, but he has to be in Galveston that evening, so he won't be able to come forward and speak on this issue.
Is Turner going to be there?
He confirmed, or should I say his staff confirmed, that he would be there for the meeting. It should be a lively debate because he has voiced grave concerns about this bond issue. And, of course, we will have representatives for those on behalf of the HISD bond issue. We hope to see a big crowd there. It's an important issue. It's important to our community. Education, in my opinion, is just important to everyone. And we expect our membership to show up, address the issues. The political caucus is only as strong as its membership wants us to be, and we become fairly strong because we participate
in all the elections, and we work hard on behalf of candidates who win. And we also have important debates about who to endorse, what to endorse. This Wednesday is another important issue, the bond issue. There are arguments on both sides, and we need to make a decision about that issue.
Well, some people out there may not know about the bond issue. I mean, they may have heard of it, but may not know many of the particulars now.
Well, this is the third bond issue. They first began back in 98, 99. Basically, what it is about funding the infrastructure of HISD, getting those schools in shape. As you all know, I know, many of these schools were falling apart, and so they broke this up into three pieces. This is the final and third piece of the bond issue, to just get as many of these schools up to par and in good shape. It's a challenge, though, because as the final piece of the bond issue, a lot of schools that certain communities had hoped would be addressed by now have not been addressed. And unfortunately, many of those communities were not in the discussion to identify the priorities. That's why it's so important that the caucus itself bring as many different communities as we can together to discuss this bond issue. We're getting some very interesting decisions back and forth, or descriptions of this bond issue from HISD. On one side, they say the final priorities are now set. On the other side, similar representatives of HISD said, no, there's some flexibility there. We're going to be asking the tough questions again this Wednesday.
Okay. So, with the endorsement, now you already did a set of endorsements last month.
Correct.
And this is sort of the final ones for the city election. And I guess this sort of is interesting because we have, this will be the last term for Anise and for the mayor.
That's right. And
in their current position.
In their current positions. They're both termed out. They, if elected, which we hope they will be this fall, they'll have 2 years left, and after that, they're termed out. They're not allowed to run again. They've both done excellent jobs in their positions, and we hope for future possibilities with each one. The election itself is November 6th, and I remind everyone to please vote. I recommend a early vote. It's 2 weeks, basically 3 weeks before the election itself almost. So you got plenty of time there to decide who you're going to vote for and go out and vote. Renew your voter registration. If you've moved recently or you have some different information, please get a hold. We have voter registration cards at our office. Get a hold of them, fill them out, and get them sent in.
Now, where is your office?
We're at 1915 Commonwealth, just south of West Gray, across the street from the thrift shop. We're in nice neighborhood. 1915 Commonwealth. Please come by. Let us know. Give us a call. Email me, mgonzalez, with an ez, at uh.edu. If you need information, I'll be happy to provide it.
And you can go to the website, can't you?
That's right. And what is our new web address?
Thecaucus.org.
That's right. Thecaucus.org. The caucus is one word, .org. That is our web address, trying to make it easier. It used to be all these... Well, it used to be the hglbtpc.org.
That still works.
That still works, too. The caucus is a bit easier now. Let me talk a little bit about some of the endorsements. I want to run through the endorsements we already have. For controller, of course, Anise Parker, our hero. At-large position 2, an excellent city council member, Sue Lovell. At-large position 3, someone we worked very hard for this spring, right, Jennifer?
Yes, we did.
Melissa Noriega. At-large position 4, Ron Green. At-large position 5, this is very important to us, Michael Berry is termed out. We're very pleased about that. And we've endorsed Jolanda Jones. Exciting, smart alum of UH. And I think she'll do an excellent job, and we'll be working on her behalf this fall. In District B, we've endorsed Jarvis Johnson. In District C, an old friend of ours, Ann Clutterbuck. In District D, another important race for us, Ada Edwards is termed out. She's always been one of our champions. We're now working very hard on behalf of Wanda Adams. We hope you all get the word out on Wanda Adams out there in District D. In District H, an old friend as well, Adrian Garcia. And in District I, another important race for us, Carol Alvarado is termed out. And we've endorsed James Rodriguez, another great fella, UH alum. Can't say that enough about him. James Rodriguez is running for District I. He is Carol Alvarado's chief of staff. He knows that area. He's high energy, smart fellow, grew up in the neighborhood. One of the things I found out about him I was really impressed by is that in order to earn his tuition for college at UH, he was a bat boy for the Astros, so that speaks well of him. Finally, in HISD, District 4, we've endorsed Paula Harris. That's an important race for us. Arthur Gaines is the current representative on there. He has announced his retirement. It's an open seat. We've endorsed Paula Harris. We think she's a real key person who can bring change to HISD board, and that's really, really important to us. In the Houston Community College System Trustee, District 1, we have endorsed Kevin Hoffman. Currently, there is an incumbent there, but we think Kevin J. Hoffman, would be a very important key change. He's a member of our community, and he's willing to be out there and make some real challenging questions to HCC. And that's basically it for the current endorsements, but this Wednesday, we'll be making a decision on the mayoral race. Bill White's name has been forwarded.
He doesn't have anybody running against him
at this point, currently. But you never know. He did mention that at the last minute, anyone can jump in, and unfortunately, they usually do. At large, position one, Peter Brown is up. We're going to be talking to him about an endorsement. But most important for us is we've got to make a decision on this bond issue, and I really hope to see a lot of people there.
Now, as far as the endorsements are concerned,
you're listening to KPFT Houston at 90.1 and at 89.5 in Galveston.
Now, as far as the endorsements are concerned, you'll be mailing out the endorsements, or they can go to the website, thecaucus.org,
see the
endorsements?
We encourage people to go to the website, thecaucus.org, first, and communicate with us through that website. Our endorsement rosters are there. We, Jennifer Poole, our president, is currently raising the money so we can do some mail outs. If you have not been receiving our mailings, let us know. You need to receive our endorsement rosters. We usually include information on the candidates. We do our homework so you don't have to. We investigate these issues, we interview these candidates, and we sit down and talk, sometimes for more than half an hour, with many of these candidates. I've spoken to many of the candidates we did not endorse, and while we have excellent citizens out there trying to win election, they all can't be endorsed, and we've had some tough decisions. But what I was really pleased by is one of the individuals running against Jolanda Jones, Zaf Tahir, did mention that he was very impressed with the level of intelligence and the breadth of questions that the caucus had. He said we were probably the most informed group he had sat down with. And, you know, that's the kind of individuals we have. Our members are the ones who screen these candidates, and we have interest in all parts of our city.
Yeah. And screening is passed now, it appears, with this last one. But in the future, for the 08 elections, you might, if you would be interested in doing that and being part of the volunteering to be part of the screening committees, you can join the caucus. And you can join the caucus. You can come to the meeting Wednesday at 6:30 for the reception and 7 for the meeting, and you can join the caucus then if you'd like.
One of the things about the caucuses, we're an open meeting. We don't close anybody out. We ask them to come in. If you're not a member, fine. It's a good chance for you to see what we do.
find out the kinds of things we discuss. We have a speaker every month. Sometimes it's a candidate. Sometimes it's someone who is contributing to the political atmosphere of Houston, like Charles Kuffner. People read his blog. People are curious to understand his opinion. And so this is the kind of individuals that we need to get out there in front of our community. It's important to us that our community is active in the political process. And so please join us or just come on by this coming Wednesday. It should be very, very interesting.
If nothing else, it'll be a nice, interesting show for an hour or two.
Oh, it's always entertaining. You know, it's always been fun to watch the endorsement meetings. I admit, Ray Hill has mellowed. It used to be so much fun when he'd throw everything down on the floor and just march out and protest. Now he actually sits around and argues. So it's a little different now.
Well, the one thing about it is that the caucus meetings are open to everyone. We want our community to come, the GLBT community and the straight community, come in. You can be part of the caucus. It's nothing, you know, we try to have an open meeting on votes. Sure, you have to be a meeting. However, if you want to make your feelings known, you can do so. The key to it is, though, that most of the people that come, when they come once or twice, and they want to join because they want to be a part of the solution that's being created by the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
We're very proud of the people we've endorsed, and we've worked very, very hard to get them elected, not just on city council, but statewide. I think one of the proudest moments for me was last year when we finally defeated Martha Wong, who did not represent the Montrose area, even though she was the representative, the state representative of Montrose. She did not represent our community. We were left out. We now have Ellen Cohn, who does a really good job in including us. But that was a process. That was years of work that we'd been working on, making sure that our neighborhoods are represented by people who listen and talk to us and communicate with us, which is why we're so active in city government as well, and why it's so important for us to make sure that the city council that runs this city has individuals on there who come to us and ask us for our opinions on all kinds of issues. And admittedly, sometimes, you know, their votes aren't what we'd wish them to be, but we're not kept out in the dark anymore.
We're part of the process, and many of them see that as such. And it's because it's only because our community, through the auspices of the GLBT Political Caucus and its PACT, have been able to do the legwork necessary to elect candidates, pro-GLBT candidates, or at least some people that aren't enemies to our community. You know, I'll take somebody that'll just say nothing than the ones that have something bad to say.
That's true. And one of the things that's going to happen this Wednesday is I'll be passing around an invitation to volunteer with the caucus. We've got another big city election. It's very important to us that we get friends elected on that city council. We have our needs as a community, and we need city council members who understand those needs. And so I'll be passing out a sheet of paper, as usual, asking people to please volunteer. We're going to be phone banking. We're going to be making doing a few door knocks, block walking, and we're going to be canvassing neighborhoods, calling people. We're going to be out at the polls handing out our endorsement card during early vote and the election itself.
Now, somebody out there, you know, oh, it's just another city election, and that's all about potholes, and it's all about the streets, or it's about drainage. Yeah, it is about that. And a lot of the work the city does through the council and the mayor is pretty ordinary in many ways, but there are issues that are critical to our community. The quality of life issues, safety issues, clean air, a greener Houston, a Houston that's being developed in a way that makes and keeps our city great, the kind of city that we want to live in and invite other people to come and to see our city grow. But most importantly for our community, you know, we're one of the top 10 cities that do not have a non-discrimination ordinance that protects sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression.
In fact, that's the most devastating thing.
We're the fourth largest city in the country, and we don't have one. Major cities throughout Texas already do. Dallas, Austin,
El Paso. Which I still can't quite get over. Even El Paso has a city ordinance that does not allow discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity and expression.
They're just
enlightened.
Except
Houston. And so Houston needs to wake up. But the only way we're going to be able to do that is if you as members of our caucus are there on Wednesday evening reminding these candidates how pivotal we are to this community, how important it is for us to be able to live in the house or rent in the neighborhood we'd like to, and just keep our jobs.
The message of the caucus for this election is a non-discrimination ordinance that protects not only all the other communities in our city, but includes sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression. All of us need to have protection, and there isn't. Now, there are various bevy of laws, federal included, that do have protections for employment and housing. However, all politics are local. When your city says that it doesn't believe in non-discrimination, that has a whole lot more power than someplace 2,000 miles away, even though we are comfortable with those laws. Our community is not, because we're not included in the federal laws. The city itself, the government has policies for non-discrimination for sexual orientation and gender identity. However, they hire contractors and suppliers that don't, which that's something that needs to be remedied also. So there's two issues. So this election is important. It's not just another city election. It is a pivotal city election for our community, and you need to be part of it.
Well, thank you all very much. I did want to say one more thing. I wanted a shout out to Lorna and thank her for the weekend. Thanks.
And so the meeting is this Wednesday, the 5th of September at 7 p.m. at the Haven Center, which is 1847 West Alabama. If you'd like some more information, you can go to thecaucus.org. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Doris and Sally were hot for each other. They met Tuesday through a mutual friend. At dinner that night, they fell in love at first bite, about to be together till the end. But Doris and Sally were not in a hurry. They promised they would take things slow. And so they waited a week until they finally moved in. It seemed a lifetime to them, you know. Why? Lesbian time is like dog years, where days are like weeks and time apart is a crime. Lesbian time is like dog years. Oh, welcome to lesbian time.
Ba 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 la
ba ba ba.
Doris and Sally had separate professions that kept them apart all day through.
Doris said, Pookie, oh, I miss you so much.
And Sally said,
but Pumpkin, not like I miss you.
So Doris and Sally put their heads together. After all, it was a favorite pose. And they started a business where they worked side by side, manufacturing hers and hers clothes. Why?
Lesbian time is like dog years, where weeks are like months and time apart is a crime. Lesbian time is like dog years. Oh, welcome to lesbian time.
When one gets hungry, the other one eats. When one gets tired, the other one sleeps. There's no conversation, they have the same thought. Now it's 7 years later, and my God, they're distraught. But Doris and Sally were truly resourceful. They managed to find a good shrink. She was a sister herself, intent on giving them help. And she said, ladies, here's what I think your problem is.
Lesbian time is like dog years, where days are like weeks and time apart is a crime. Lesbian time is like dog years.
Oh, welcome to lesbian.
We're such a wreck.
Welcome to lesbian.
We're such a mess.
Welcome to lesbian.
We're so enmeshed.
Oh, welcome to lesbian.
That's a group called Estrogen from 2001. Lesbian Theme from their album Tales from Lesbianville. And in the previous hour, after the interview with Kelly Smith, I played the same group, Estrogen, and from the same album again, Tales from Lesbianville. And the title of that previous piece was Lesbian Moment. So this was Lesbian Theme, and previously it was Lesbian Moment. Well, more from This Way Out next. This is Queer Voices.
Later in the program, we'll prove that you cannot have too much lesbian music or too many wise words from queer pioneers. But first, we'll join closet watchers around the world for a visit to the powder room.
What do you do in a men's room except what everyone normally does? Tap! While we're all pretending to crap, this guy puts his foot through the gap under the stall and goes tap!
The U.S. Republican Party is going through some hard times. In recent weeks, there have been reports that conservative U.S. Senator from Louisiana David Vitter's telephone number was listed in the records of an infamous Washington, D.C. madam. Right-wing Republican U.S. Senator Ted Stevens' home in Alaska was raided by federal agents as part of a corruption investigation. Florida State Representative Bob Allen is embroiled in his own men's room sex scandal. And now Idaho Senior U.S. Senator, three-term Republican Larry Craig, has resigned following a week-long furor that grew out of his arrest and guilty plea arising from a police undercover sting operation in a Minneapolis airport men's room. As the 62-year-old Craig told an Idaho press conference on September 1st,
I have little control over what people choose to believe, but clearly my name is important to me and my family is so very important also. Having said that, to pursue my legal options as I continue to serve Idaho would be an unwanted and unfair distraction of my job and for my Senate colleagues. Therefore, it is with sadness and deep regret that I announce that it is my intent to resign from the Senate effective September 30th.
Idaho's Republican governor, C.L. Butch Otter, has reportedly already settled on a successor, Lieutenant Governor Jim Risch, who will fill Craig's seat until next year, and then presumably run for a full term in what was expected to be an easy re-election bid for Craig.
Craig pleaded guilty to a lesser charge of disorderly conduct, but he was originally charged with soliciting sex from an undercover police officer. Police Sergeant Dave Karsnia said that soon after he'd set up his position in the airport restroom, Craig entered and sat in the stall next to him. Craig touched his right foot to the left foot of the officer, brushed his hand beneath the partition into the officer's stall, and engaged in other conduct, according to Karsnia, often used by persons communicating a desire to engage in sexual conduct. In his first press conference earlier in the week following the revelation of his arrest and guilty plea, Craig began with an odd turn of phrase.
Thank you all very much for coming out today.
Craig said he'd done nothing wrong, that he had pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of disorderly conduct to be finished with the matter, but subsequently regretted it and apologized to his wife, who was at his side, his family, and everyone in Idaho for the controversy. He found it necessary to deny being gay more than once during that 4.5-minute press conference.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
And?
I wasn't eager to share this failure, but I should have anyway, because I am not gay.
Craig refused to take questions, but that didn't stop one reporter from trying.
Thank you very much.
Senator, what happened in Minneapolis?
What if you were gay?
Openly gay, U.S. Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts, a Democrat, told the Associated Press that he had hoped Craig wouldn't resign. It's one thing to say that someone can't be trusted to vote without being corrupt, said Frank. It's another to say that he can't be trusted to go to the bathroom by himself.
Meanwhile, during interrogation following his arrest at a Titusville, Florida public park in July for soliciting sex from an undercover policeman, Florida State Representative Bob Allen said that he'd been intimidated by the officer, whom he described as a stocky black guy, and that he worried that he might become a statistic. The oddly racist explanation drew public outrage, and thanks to a judge's ruling this week, it won't be repeated at Allen's September 19th trial.
Both Allen and Craig have terrible voting records on LGBT issues. Unlike Craig, Allen is fighting his arrest in court, but they both denied being gay in their public statements. Few seem to be discussing a bisexual possibility in one or both cases, nor have we seen much community discussion in the context of these arrests about sex in public places. Probably most offensive to heterosexuals, but to many LGBT people also. Defenders say that for deeply closeted gay and bisexual men, however, it may be their only outlet and a first step in a hoped-for coming-out process. Gay journalist Rex Walkner, reflecting on his college days in his Walkner Wire column this week, wrote that, "I met my boyfriend of those years in the tea room in the southeast corner of the basement of the University of Illinois Student Union. We actually never had sex there, it's just where we met, given the limited options for meeting other gay guys that existed in 1985 in Champaign, Urbana. I couldn't care less if Larry Craig comes out of the closet," he wrote, "but I will not let him tell me he wasn't cruising. He could teach a cruising 101 course."
And in considering their proclamations of innocence, you'd have to believe that neither Allen nor Craig did anything to get a police officer's attention. Craig has claimed entrapment, a term that itself begs another question. Doesn't there have to be an expressed desire of some sort on the part of the man getting arrested for entrapment to even occur? This report was written by Greg Gordon, and for This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Rick Watts.
T for tap and Zoo for tea. Me do you and you do me. Won't you meet me in the tea room? That oh so sleazy as can be room. Boom boom ba boom boom ba boom boom ba boom. Doom doom da doom doom da doom doom da doom in the boom boom room. The men, the boys. 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 Make love all you want, just don't make any noise. One, two, tap your shoe. Three, four, open the door. Five, six, pull out the skin. Seven, eight, masturbate, fornicate, copulate. Nine, ten, start again. All you have to do is tap your shoe and kiss. Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
A new This Way Out update is now on our website. For program reviews and behind-the-scenes news, you should check it out at www.thiswayout.org.
It's time for Who Said That? On this episode of the Rainbow Minute. Born in Harlem in 1924, he suffered under the rule of his Bible-thumping stepfather, who called him an ugly child. Once grown, he faced the double predicament of being black in racist America and a gay man in an African-American community. With $40 in his pocket, he left America to live in Paris, a move that he said saved his life. For the next 40 years, he wrote plays, novels, and essays. Some challenged the logic of racism, and others defended the naturalness of homosexual desire. He once said, "Although coming out is going to make problems, those problems are not so dangerous as the problems of lying to yourself, to your friends, and missing many opportunities." Who said that? It was James Baldwin, a legendary pioneer of 20th century literature. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
One more kiss will only sweeten my remembrance of you as we open the Sky Observer's Guide in the latest edition of the audiophile.
Come and lay down by my side till the early morning light. It's sad to be alone. Help me make it through.
Five, ten, three, four.
Take the ribbon from your hair. Take it loose and let it fall. Lay it soft upon my skin, like the shadows on the wall. Come and lay down by my side till the early morning light.
one of the premier independent bands of Australia, has just released their fourth full-length album. It's called One More Kiss. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. The band is called Blue House and is comprised of Jackie Walter and Bernadette Carroll. Jackie says that working with an Australian music legend turned out to be a great deal of fun.
Well, One More Kiss is our new album, and we got a chance to work with Australia's greatest guitarist, Tommy Emmanuel, who also produced it for us and played most of the instruments. He let Bernadette and I sing, and he managed to capture a fantastic live vocal sound. And we had a great time working with him, and you can tell we had a lot of fun. In fact, you can hear us laughing on a couple of the tracks.
Looks like the rain set in, we'll have it for a week. Pack my bags, I'm leaving home to meet you. Catch the train from South Granada to the city like no other. All that I need to get me through, if I had you. All that I need to get me through, if I had you. Sydney too.
Find out more about the album One More Kiss at www.bluehouse.net.
The latest album by Diana Jones evokes the sound of old-time country music with themes of love, loss, and redemption. It's called My Remembrance of You.
Don't want to be a pretty girl. Don't want to work for tips and hurl myself across this sad dance floor.
Album is called My Remembrance of You. It's dedicated to the memory of my grandfather, Robert Lee Mirandel, and I've been touring around the States and Europe and the UK for about a year now, supporting it.
Trees are bare tonight, and there is a chill through my flesh and my bones. Still a red moon shines, set the sky on fire, warms that a winter wind that moans. My love is like snowy white owl sitting high in a sycamore. Served in his countenance and his affection for me. Oh, favor man, take him to your bosom soon. Fill him with your heat, with your fire. Or turn him into cinder, let his heart to ashes fall. Find not the one that he desires.
You can get more information about Diana Jones and her album, My Remembrance of You, at www.dianajones.net.
Folk music of Amy Cook has appeared on a number of TV shows, including The L Word, and her latest album is also very reflective, being called The Sky Observer's Guide.
The new album is called The Sky Observer's Guide, and it's a really personal record for me about moving from California to Texas and thinking back on basically being a kid and growing up and coming to terms with myself and my life and my love and the journey of my life so far.
Down over the western edge.
Find out more about the CD, The Sky Observer's Guide by Amy Cook, at www.amycook.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, John Beaupre, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Blue House, Diana Jones, and Amy Cook performed some of the music you heard, along with an excerpt from the 1994 gay musical comedy, The Ballad of Little Mikey. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out anytime and exclusively at OutInAmerica.com. You can also get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are supported by direct tax-deductible donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. We'll thank you with your choice of some very special programming CDs. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. To request a CD or cassette copy of this week's program, or sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WHUS Stores, Connecticut, KUGS, Bellingham, Washington, CFRC, Kingston, Ontario, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. And you may recall that last month on a Monday, very early in the morning, there was a shot fired into the control room here at KPFT by a passing car, and narrowly missed actually the person who was on the air at the time. This unfortunate incident has led to some expensive security upgrades here at KPFT, and so we really are looking for some help with that. If you would like to donate a little something extra to help defray the cost of repairs and added security, please go to the KPFT website at kpft.org. And of course, we would also kind of like to find out who these folks were who had this particular editorial comment. There is a neighborhood alert out and a reward of up to $5,000. If you know who it is that was doing this drive-by shooting back in August. And if you do, if you know anything about it, please call Crime Stoppers, because this was a crime, 713-222-TIPS. All callers will remain anonymous, and again, there is a reward of up to $5,000 for information leading to the arrest of these particular folks. Well, unfortunately, Donna Garrett is not available to be with us, as we had promised you earlier. However, from the extensive Queer Voices archives, I have pulled J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage New Music Spotlight. He produced a number of these. And so this particular New Music Spotlight from February of 2005, and J.D. highlights Christopher Dahlman.
Queer Music Heritage
on KPFT in Houston.
This is J.D. Doyle with a Queer Music Heritage New Music Spotlight. My regular show, Queer Music Heritage, is heard monthly on Queer Voices on the fourth Monday of the month. But as that segment is more oriented towards the older music of our culture, I often do not get to feature as many new artists as I'd like. And there are plenty of very talented artists whose work deserves to be shared with our listeners. So this feature is designed to do just that. You'll get to hear some of the music from the artist's latest CD, along with some interview comments. And the spotlight this time is on an artist named Christopher Dahlman. He started out in Milwaukee and then took his career to New York City, and then on to Los Angeles, working towards releasing that first CD. And it happened in 2004. His debut album is called Race the Light. And frankly, it's one of the CDs from last year that impressed me the most, and I hear a lot of CDs. When I first heard it, I immediately contacted Christopher for an interview so that the CD could be featured on the audiophile segment I co-produced for This Way Out, and it ended up in December making our Best of the Year show. I very much admire this album. That's enough intro. Let's get to the music.
I envy the people who don't bother with regret. Outside of yesterday, and they forget, I don't forget anything. I don't forget anything. Did you forget the 7th of September? Remember I do, the day I fell through. A hole in the sky, I'm falling, calling for your.
From the CD Race the Light, that was a little of the song 7th of September. Christopher, tell us about your CD.
I would describe my CD as a journey, hopefully. And the musical style, I guess, is folk rock, folk pop. Some people have called it transcendent folk pop. Some people have called it heartbroken folk funk. I don't know. I like everyone, I guess, would like think it defies categorization.
And who's your audience?
My audience is made up of all different kinds of people. I don't really have a sense of the demographic at this point. Marketing and promotion aren't really things that, you know, come naturally to me. So before I actually had an album, you know, a product to push, everything just kind of hinged on word of mouth. You know, friends telling friends telling friends and that sort of thing. And it's just now that I am starting to look out into the audience and not know, you know, the first name of half of them. It's just kind of exciting.
You've told me that it's important for you to be out as a musician. Why is that?
Simply because it's the truth. And honesty is really crucial in my songwriting. It's not something I think I can really dance around. I wish that it was maybe more politically motivated, but frankly, it's just I can't think of a good reason to lie about it.
What out musicians do you admire?
Frankly, I admire every gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender artist out there, just simply based on the fact of it's tough to raise your voice. It's not something that comes naturally to a lot of people, and it's such a fight to be a creative person that functions in this world. It's such a fight in and of itself that when you throw all of the baggage of you know, sexuality onto it, I think it can be sort of insurmountable for some people. So based on that, I admire anybody that kind of plugs ahead. But musically, I guess I admire Ani DiFranco. I'm sure you can hear that a little bit in my music. I admire Rufus Wainwright tremendously. He is so talented and inspiring and one of a kind, and somebody who's, you know, not let their sexuality, not denied their sexuality, but also not sort of used it as a marketing tool. He just kind of is what he is. Which is how I sort of would like to think of myself.
Of what song in the album are you the most proud?
The eighth track, it's called Over My Head. It's the newest song on the album, and I'm proud of it because, for me, it kind of represents that I can paint with a much wider palette than I'd proven previously in my songwriting. I'm a big fan of artists that have you know, really evolved over time. You know, someone like Joni Mitchell who started off really, really folky and then just changed, you know, and the through line of it all was her, of course, but the style of the music changed dramatically, you know, sometimes for good and sometimes for eek, but you know, I'd like to think that I can take those chances too, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I mean, the reason that it's the reason that I like it the best is because it's, you know, the thing that drew me to songwriting initially was, you know, the anger of a broken heart, and I'm happy to know that I have a lot of other stories to tell and am capable of telling them.
How do you greet the day with sunshine in your eyes and a smile that seems to say, morning, it's like I'm raising the dead. Gotta fool my heart so I can fool my head out of bed. Out of bed.
Tell me about the song Brand New Lover.
Brand New Lover is a song about feeling like you are broken, like you are just kind of wired wrong. For this world, and then kind of realizing toward the second half of the song that it's not you, it's just a connection that you're seeking. So in particular for me, it was feeling like I wasn't really fitting into the culture of my youth, and in particular the culture of my gay youth. When I was, you know, in my late teens and first in New York City. And I felt the whole time like I, you know, like it was just me. Like there was something wrong with me that I'm not connecting. And, you know, then life teaches you otherwise and you find out that you're made just the way you're supposed to be. Just kind of waiting for the right thing to click with.
In the bathroom, I comb my face with water. Drink my reflection, say, what do you expect? Most days I seem to be loose wires that dangle. Never seem to connect. Back away, I lost my sense of a straight line. Lost my sense of time as it falls. In the middle of the night, in the middle of the night, I was awoken by the light from you.
Please tell me about This Is Calm.
It is the oldest song on the record, and it is a song that the moment it came out of my mouth, I kind of knew that it was opening a door into a whole other place, and I knew that it was something that was going to be with me for a long time. And, you know, now it's like a blessing and a curse, kind of, because it's the song that people, you know, respond to most generally. But it's the first song that I wrote when I moved to New York City. And I moved there with a lover, a boyfriend, and that ended, and this is about the aftermath. And at the time, I you know, I was just this kid from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now I'm living in New York City. I had one other friend, and I didn't really know what to do with myself, how to deal with this. And so I leaned on this friend who attended Columbia University at the time, and which is in Morningside Heights. And I lived in Queens, so I just kind of took the train back and forth from Queens to Morningside, like over and over. And that was like my existence for a while.
Ride the train from Queens to Morningside. Keep my eyes straight ahead, keep my face dignified. But is this linear or a downward slide? This is calm. When I asked you to leave, it threw your mind in the dark.
How did you come up with the title of the CD?
I titled the CD Race the Light. Those words, Race the Light, are the chorus of the last song on the album, Dragonfly. One of my goals with this record was to make an album that was sort of a journey, you know, one where you put the CD in and you press play and you're just kind of taken and end up in a different place than where you were when you began. And you know, the album starts in such a dark and heavy place and really just kind of opens up and blossoms so nicely, I think, emotionally. And I guess that Race the Light just kind of represented that journey for me.
I keep him down, I sip my red wine, ride the skyline, let it loose on this town. Race the light, race the light, ride the night.
This is a logical time to mention again that the artist's name is Christopher Dahlman, and his debut CD is called Race the Light. You can find him at www.christopherdahlman.com, and Dahlman is D-A-L-L-M-A-N. Okay, often when I put together these Spotlight interviews, I like to say my favorite song in the album until last, and that would be the song Motel Room.
Motel Room is about a cheater. It's about it's about a betrayal, and it's a plea to the betrayer for an explanation, for acknowledgement, for, you know, for anything, really. And I'm often asked, what are the four words written in shaky, faded ink? And while I'm not gonna tell what the specific words are, I'll tell you the backstory is that I had confronted my boyfriend about you know, the alleged dirty deed and had been denied and made to feel crazy and everything. And, you know, I just still felt this thing in my gut that told me it was true. And so it was actually, it was Christmas Day, and I was, blah 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 blah. It's Christmas Day, and I picked up his diary and opened it. I mean, this is so out of character for me. I mean, I as a singer songwriter, of course, of, you know the value of privacy and how sacred that is. But just, you know, something in me told me this was true, and I picked up the diary and I opened it, and there it was on the first page that I looked. There were those four words that, you know, were basically the confirmation of what I, you know, felt was had happened.
He looks just like Disneyland. He moves just like palm trees walk. He's got diamonds in his hand. He's got
got scrapes on both of his knees. He's eager to please. He is your biggest secret. Got me rooting through your trunk wall. Oh, is he the reason for this life jacket? Is he the reason that this shit sunk? Former, written, shaky, faded ink. I bet the drapes were pink in that old motel room. Forward, watch my stomach sink or swim. How could you follow him to that old motel room? Some days I feel 12 years old. Some days I'm sliding toward the grave wall. Sometimes I can take this, but other times I wanna give you back what you gave. Over, written in a shaky, faded ink. I bet the drapes were pink in that old motel room. Forward, written where I ain't supposed to see, and all my friends agree that you must be the devil. Justify this geography. Show me where we went wrong on the map. And I try to stand tall. I try to think of anything else at all, but it's hard to move on with this knife in my back. It's hard to move on with this knife in my back. It's hard to move on with this knife in my back.
And once again, that was J.D. Doyle's New Music Spotlight from February of 2005, highlighting Christopher Dolman from the extensive and cavernous Queer Voices Vault.
Very extensive, isn't it?
Very extensive.
Hello. We're from deep in the vault. Sometimes we feel like we want to go crawl in the vault.
At least it's not like the old days when we had reel-to-reel tape.
Oh, my God. That'd be terrible.
Oh, I
remember to find
those
days. Yes.
Everything is so different. It's a whole new age. Everything's digital. And
yeah, even here at KPFT.
I know.
Enough.
It's amazing. Well, here we are, another
holiday,
episode.
Another Labor Day. Yes. Another year has passed. And
Back to school.
So
yes.
Be careful on
remember
the streets. Obey those traffic signs.
Yes, when you're coming up to a school zone, when those lights are flashing, remember 20 miles an hour.
Do
that's awfully slow.
Do you know that even if it's not a school day, like today, and there's those lights are flashing, they can still ticket you if you're going,
yes,
not going,
oh,
20?
Yes. Yeah, oh, yes.
So
because it clearly says on there, if when light, 20 miles an hour, when light is flashing, no matter what the day it is.
Yes. But it is important to be very careful in traffic and to, you know, hang up the cell phone or get a
hands-free for
something. But I'm getting really
irritated. Well, tomorrow when you're out there driving around and when you're not on your cell phone or texting someone, just look at the cars ahead of you and see which ones are on the phone.
You know what's even worse? Well, when they're in their on the shopping cart when they're going through the grocery store.
Oh, yeah.
Although it's not quite as dangerous, it's worse because they don't have a clue.
I don't know how
people shop and talk on the phone at the same
Well, they don't bring their list. That's why. They're talking to their partner back home.
Well, it is useful to check for things, but no, people are carrying on just outright conversations about all kinds of things.
Well, the thing is that as I'm driving around, because I have to drive around a lot in my business, and I can tell they'll be 5 miles below the the speed limit, and they're sort of edging back and forth between the lines, and you'd think, any other time you'd think, if it was 2 o'clock in the morning, they're drunk, right? No, you get up, you pass them, they're on their cell phone.
They're
not a hands-free either.
Often it's less than, it's more than 5 miles per hour below the speed limit. I mean, they might be going 15 miles in a 35-mile zone.
Well, that's because they're texting.
Oh.
You know, you're driving with your knee, and it's awfully hard.
And they have the little dog in one hand and
a cigarette in the other.
And they're driving the SUV.
With the knees. I got to get me. Well, anyway.
Well, you met that person, don't you?
yes. Enough of that silliness.
Well, on that note.
Yes.
Yes. Wednesday at Haven Center is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus General Meeting, and it starts. The meeting itself starts at 7 o'clock, but at 6:30 there's a reception prior to the meeting. So come, you can mingle with the people there, have a glass of wine, and enjoy yourself before the meeting starts. And it is an endorsement meeting, but also we'll have a speaker there, Charles Kaufner from the Houston Chronicle, and he's their blogger. He does off the cuff.
So the speaker speaks, and then they present the recommendations about endorsements, and then the PAC convenes
to
make the vote.
Yes.
And if you're a member of the caucus, you're a member of the PAC?
That's correct.
All right. That's
so you
good.
Have to vote. You'll have to do, you know, certification at the door when you come in.
Oh, and they'll be all
and official. Jennifer is the leader of the PAC.
Yes.
Oh, rum.
Yeah. Oh, boy. You don't have that handy.
I'm so sorry.
I've
just dated myself.
From now on, I often date myself, and so nobody else will. No. I'm joking.
Those of you who do not believe that she was joking, please call in.
No, you know what we need? We need some more people to be involved in this radio show, particularly some younger people and some more women. And if you are interested in maybe doing a segment once a month or helping learn how to engineer and help with the phones, things like that, then you're very welcome to volunteer and join our collective. You can contact me at Deborah@queervoices.org. That's DEBORAH. Deborah.
I think I spelled it right when I set it up.
I hope so. Or you can contact Jack@queervoices.org and let us know of your interest, and we'll see what we can do to fix you up. KPFT does do trainings, and it's a good way to get involved in being part of something that is a community institution, and to learn a skill. And we try to have a good time.
We usually do.
We have a
good time.
And we get to gossip about everything in between, you know, when we've got recorded things on. So that's fun.
Where else can you go and play with a 100,000-watt hi-fi system?
Yes.
Hey, there you go.
Come join us. It's, you know, it's really nice here. I mean, where else do you have nude radio?
Although it's a little chilly tonight.
I know it is. So what's supposed to happen next week?
You tell me.
Well, I will then. All right. Kamal Bosamia will talk with us on a special event being held at Macy's that benefits the Human Rights Campaign, which is on September the 18th. September is National Alcohol and Drug Addiction Recovery Month, and we'll be speaking with someone from the Montrose Counseling Center, and from the GLBT's perspective, Jeff Reed will be here on about the political beat. Christiane Salinas, Executive Director of QFest, will talk with Jack about this year's Houston GLBT Movie Festival.
And we need to thank our guest tonight, David Elliott, with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. The lovely Kelly Smith with her motivational information. And, of course, Maria Gonzalez talking about the activities of the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Political Caucus.
Yes, and this is Jennifer Renee.
Deborah Bell.
And Jack Polinsky.
And Glenn Holt.
Good night.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station.
Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Tour de Pink is back. On Sunday, September 9, Pink Ribbons Project will host its third annual fundraising bicycle ride, Tour de Pink 2007. Cyclists will raise money for Pink Ribbons Project, In Motion Against Breast Cancer. Contributions and pledges will fund awareness and education programs, mammograms for underserved women, and other outreach programs. Last year, over 1,000 riders registered and rode. This year, it's another family-friendly event with routes from 12 to 100 miles. It starts and ends on the Prairie View A&M University campus near Hempstead. So grab your bikes and join us Sunday, September 9 at 7:30 a.m. on the start line. To register or volunteer, visit tourdepink.org on the web. That's tourdepink.org or call 713-524-7465. See you there. KPFT, Houston.
Participants come from all over the country to honor those who have succumbed to the disease and bring celebratory recognition to the survivors attending the event. The Komen Houston Race for the Cure raises money each year to fund national research through the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Award and Research Grant Program, Innovative Breast Cancer Education.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.